Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
My name's Catherine Carr, and this is season two of Relatively, the podcast all about potentially the longest relationships of your life.
It's like a fever dream. We got loads of rosettes.
I'll be bringing siblings together to talk about the connections they have as adults, as well as what it was like growing up together. This week, we're talking to the author, Catriona Ward.
I can't remember what... Did we lie about it? Did we construct a narrative where we weren't fighting?
And her sister, Antonia Ward.
I can't remember that, but clearly I was chasing you, so who's the aggressor here?
But I'll also talk to them separately to get a more private take on the relationship.
So when we were little, like, Kat was so much fun, but she also had this incredible interior world. Like, looking back through old photos, in almost every one, she's holding a book.
She'd done some really incredibly brave things. Like, she fell in love and she moved all the way across the world for a boy. And I remember thinking, like, don't move, don't give up your job and move for a boy. But, you know, that was wrong.
Brothers and sisters are never straightforward. Catriona and Antonia, or Katinks and Noon, are 20 months apart and spent their childhood in exotic locations as well as the US and Dartmoor in the UK, a place which inspired Catriona's writing. We talk about moving around, playing horses, trying to fit in, and the importance of aunties. But Catriona, who's the eldest, started by describing a near-miss experience on the island of Madagascar.
I mean, we fought, I think, like everyone does. We had this intense loyalty to each other as well that sort of superseded anything else. I always remember when, like, so Madagascar, obviously not particularly well equipped with hospitals or anything like that, so it's quite serious if you get yourself damaged in any meaningful way. I remember we were having a fight, and she was chasing me, and I slammed a door in her face, but the thing is, her hand was outstretched, and it was a glass door.
I had this strong sense of justice that I was chasing Kat because some great wrong had been done, and the doors all had these glass panes in them, and so I sort of, like, I mean, you know, reaching out to grab her, and she slammed the door on my hand.
So her hand went right through the glass door, and she was like, isn't it tiny? I remember this tiny little thing, it broke the glass, and she cut. I mean, luckily it didn't actually go near the vital bits, but she was bleeding from her wrist, you know.
And there was that moment where we both just sort of went quiet for a minute, and we were like, what's happened there? And then I think that we were just a little bit sheepish about my mum's, which we suddenly became very good at working together to try and keep that quiet.
And we were it definitely put an end to the fight. We were sort of sitting on the floor going, how do we not tell mum and dad about what we've done? Did not prove possible, but I can't remember what... Did we lie about it? Did we construct a narrative where we weren't fighting and broke a door and tried to murder you by severing your vein?
I can't remember that, but obviously, like, you know, it went from... Clearly I was chasing you, so who's the aggressor here? But and so I've quite rightly ended up with a scar, like, right next to that big vein in your... wrist.
Didn't you have to get airlifted to Reunion?
What?
To go to hospital? Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean if one did go to hospital, you had to...
Yeah, yeah. No, didn't get. But if one went to the hospital, she's like, I don't remember that.
Yeah. That would be one hell of a suppressed memory, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, you remember? You were in a coma for a year.
What? Yeah, exactly. Maybe you still are.
That's your fourth book, Catriona.
Yeah, exactly.
What sorts sorts of things would you have rowed about when you were little? Can you remember?
Oh, it's always you're using my thing. I have my things and you have you things. And the thing is, I was and still am not that careful with my possessions, whereas Antonia's incredibly careful. So quite often I'd break my thing and then I'd want to use her thing. And she would understandably say, no, you broke your thing.
Is that true? Is she quite careless, Antonia, with stuff?
I wouldn't say careless, but, you know, Kat's sort of, you know, operating on a higher plane and so focused on these other, you know, big important things.
That's a yes. You can hear a yes in that. My mum said, actually, she said the one thing she thought was really true, rang true in Fleabag, was when, and I think it's in the second episode, is when the two sisters are at the play and she looks at her and realises she's wearing her top. Yes. And there's this, like, moment of, like, poison that goes between them.
Yeah, and that goes from childhood straight through.
Yeah, it doesn't stop. It just, things just change.
I wanted to ask you about the fact that you travelled so much. I know your dad worked as a water economist, so you guys were a little unit that picked up, packed up and moved around the globe. What do you think that did to your relationship?
At the times of moving, you know, I was particularly the younger moves up until about sort of eight. I didn't think about it, you know, wherever the family went was perfect. We were going to be very, you know, happy and comfortable and settled. Obviously, now looking back on it, Kat and I were extremely bonded by that, really, really close. And we just made our own fun and our own world wherever we were, really.
Well, it was lovely. I mean, it was a sort of, in a lot of ways, it was lovely. It was, I mean, we kept chameleons as pets. It's, you know, and we just found them in the garden and kept them as pets. It was pretty special and idyllic. And, you know, like when we go for a walk on Sunday, you go to the rainforest and have a walk. I do remember being lonely, and I think she maybe was just that tiny bit younger, so maybe it didn't seem, you know, maybe that, like in our school, for instance, there were 12 kids, and that's all from first to 12th grade.
Wow.
We'd all sit in sort of a row in these classrooms, and the teacher would just, like, move back a row to teach the next grade, which is probably just one child, or indeed, like, a whole entire grade skipped because there was no one in it.
I had three other students in my year, and we were all really close friends, and you know, still am with some of them, and you know, it was such a lovely, small, approachable world. You know, I felt very confident in it. It was such a place of adventure, but security.
You know, and this is before the internet as well. It's not like you can feel connected really to anywhere else or family or things like that. But also, when you move, you can't take people with you. So I do remember that. I do remember that being quite lonely. I wouldn't change it for the world, believe me. And I think I don't know any childhood that doesn't have its own particular sort of challenges. But I think it was idyllic and it was beautiful. And I think it made us very close. But it also, there was a need there. Like, we needed each other because there was not that much other friendship or intimacy.
It's quite a lot to ask from one relationship, isn't it? Especially when you're reaching, what, the age of 10, 11?
Yeah, it is. And I think there was a sort of sense of us being very much the same. We sort of looked a bit the same, you know, and we liked the same things. We liked horses and running around the garden and keeping chameleons and jumping around and climbing trees. And so we were the same, you know. But then I guess at about that age, it starts to become apparent that maybe you have different interests and you are different. And I think that may have taken us a bit by surprise, you know.
Mm. You were just the girls, I suppose, to your parents. Like, the girls are doing this and the girls are doing that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So after the age of eight, after you maybe were a bit more sentient about it and you had to leave friends that presumably you'd made in location A, B or C, did you start to think, oh, this isn't as great as maybe I thought it was?
Yes, I definitely from so that move was, you know, also one from a really beautiful and sort of free life to moving to America, which was quite a shock as a change in itself. And I don't remember so much focusing on missing friends, honestly, and I'm sure that's huge
testament to having that close bond with Kat. But I definitely just found it hard to move to somewhere that was so much more urban and more structured with school. It was such a big change for all of us. We all sort of slightly introverted for a while, working on placing ourselves in the new world.
And when you tried to describe when you arrived in the States where you'd come from, you said you introverted a bit, but you must have had to explain to your new classmates, like, I just grew up on this tropical island and sitting in avocado trees, you know.
Yes.
How was that?
Well, thankfully we went to this wonderful international school there, and there were people from all over the world. But I definitely say, oh, I'm from Madagascar, and my parents had to sort of gently say, not really, no, you you're from, you know, they would say you say that you're from Devon, and I was like, I don't really know where Devon is just yet.
You know, without being too much of a pop psychologist, although I do like doing that, but you know, the idea of family and that slight claustrophobia and the identity and the little tribe thing is something that you do like to riff on in your books.
Well, that's the thing, is, you know, that it's so strange, isn't it? Writing happens so in the subterranean bits, or perhaps just out of the corner of your eye, maybe is a better way of phrasing it. Like, Antonia and I particularly, I think we remember things and commemorate things very differently. She's really good at documenting stuff. Like, she takes lots of photos. She has lots of really, like, amusing and explicit memories. I think I have a sort of more kind of almost like sea change memory, where I find it difficult to sometimes to you know, remember specific things. But what happens, what comes out when I start writing is those relationships, you know, is absolutely those things. But it didn't really, sometimes it takes someone pointing it out to me in a way, because it's just so embedded in my psyche. But yeah, no, I think it's a very fair point.
And Devon is quite important, seems to sort of loom large, this Dartmoor environment in her horror books. And from what I've read, she, from quite small, suffered from night terrors and would often creep into your bed, I read, if she suffered from one of them. Can you remember that? And if you can you describe what that was like for you two?
First of all, Devon and Dartmoor is such a huge part of our life. And now I'd be so fiercely proud to say that I come from Devon.
Now you know where it is.
Exactly. Now I know that it's there, and we're going to always be going there. The night terrors was a very, very, very vivid thing. You know, our rooms were on opposite ends of this house, this old Devon Long house, and, you know, it had big bright windows, and it had a very, you know, sort of nice clean feel to it during the daytime. But at night, I'd, you know, peacefully go to sleep in my room, and you know, you can hear foxes calling off in the distance, and all of this sort of, you know, wind rustling the trees, and just very, you know, atmospheric.
It was a good 3 or 4 years wherever we spent a night in that house, and I don't know why it was just in that house. Maybe it was a particular kind of anxiety, but I would wake up with a hand in the small of my back, just pushing me, shoving me out of bed. I'd fall and I'd land quite hard on the floor. It was terrifying, and it was more than that as well. There was a real sense of, you know, when you can tell there's someone in the room with you.
Yes.
Even when you can't see them, I just knew there was someone there, and I knew it didn't like me.
And then in the middle of the night, I'd wake up and there's, you know, cats sort of curled up on the floor, or you know, kind of sliding into bed with me, and she just didn't really say why, you know, and it just kept happening, and I didn't really think too much about it, and then she explained it. And one night I slept in her room, and I have to say I definitely got absolutely terrified.
I don't think that I've felt fear like that before or since. It's not fear that has a sort of place in the daylight world. You know, there are lots of things I'm frightened of, but that is the most frightened I think I've ever been.
Because I've never felt, you know, sort of like I have night terrors like that. I don't know whether I was just connecting with what she'd experienced in the room, but it had a different atmosphere from my room, without sounding too out there.
And yeah, I just used to creep in to her bedroom and sleep on her floor. And it's so strange, because I don't think you really question things like that at that age. You sort of take the world for granted as it is, because I think perhaps also at that time you're already discovering that there's so much you don't know about the world. You know, you're just on the cusp of, or in my case, adolescence, and you're realizing that the world is strange. So perhaps that seemed just part and parcel of the strangeness, because I don't think we really discussed it with my parents.
Well, also, you're 40, I'm 43. I'm imagining parenting back in the 80s, 70s. There wasn't so much a sort of leap to pathologise and label and medicalise everything the same way that there is now.
Well, the thing is, you don't know their night terrors at the time, do you?
No.
Especially, this is a pre-Google age, you know, and there was no way to really investigate things like that. All children have bad dreams as well, and it's just very... How do I, as an inarticulate 13-year-old, distinguish this from a bad dream? Mm. It's not easy to find the language to do that. So I wrote a book about it instead 20 years later. Even at that time, it's interesting, isn't it? I went to her room, not to like my mum or dad's room. I don't know why. I think actually there was also slightly, so I'm just thinking back now, there might have been a slight sense of shame as well, because I think, I don't know, really extreme fear does bring shame, I think. It makes you feel vulnerable. And I'm not sure I wanted my parents to know, in a way.
And your little sister's not going to judge you because she's your little sister.
Well, quite exactly. That's a really good point. And so, yeah, looking back, I think that might have been a big part of it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
What sorts of games would you play when you were in Dartmoor? You're pretending to be horses galloping around your Madagascan garden. What would you play and how would you spend your time there?
Oh, there was a lot of pretending that we're horses everywhere, really. and then we each had a little patch of garden that our mum and dad had given to us. So we would, you know, choose little plants for it and sort of play about gardening with it.
It was a weird landscape for us, you know. It's like hills and tors and wild ponies and bracken and like Bronze Age stone circles on a hilltop. It was completely different to everything we'd known.
There was a path that went right up onto the moor, so we'd wander up there through the old woodland up onto the tors.
I mean, your childhood sounds, I can't really expect, it just sounds so free.
It really did feel free. Yeah, it really did.
And I found it incredibly, and still do actually, I found it incredibly kind of enlarging. It made me feel at the same time more secure and also more kind of bigger inside, if that makes sense. And I think that started back then for sure.
She does talk a lot about playing horses, and you've mentioned horses. Just talk me through the horsey thing.
I think horses are quite magical, aren't they? You know, in those places, like in Kenya and Madagascar, perhaps there wasn't a great deal of social activity or ways of going out to see the world, you know, because you're quite little and you can't really do things on your own. And I think riding horses, first of all, it's just very fun. And it's a physical thing you can do, but it also is a way of, like, you know, getting out and seeing the countryside. And I'm talking about actual horses now, not playing horses, but particularly for her, she was very, very good. She used to compete and she won a lot of medals.
She did not tell me that.
Of course she wouldn't. She would never tell you that. She's very modest. But she was very, very good. She used to like show jump in America.
I'm going to slightly tell you off, Antonia, for being so humble and not mentioning the fact that you are some sort of supersonic horsewoman and your older sister had to tell me about it.
Well, that's very kind of her.
Well, you were. You're so good.
But right back at you. Equal supersonic.
No, you were better. No, you were always better. And I used to mind.
I just did it more. That's because I've grown as a person.
I don't know, man. I think you were just better.
That's very, very big of you.
So you said that Catriona is, you know, very much, she's always been your older sister, obviously, and you look up to her. But how would you describe her, maybe then and now? What's her character like?
I think, when we were little, like, Kat was so much fun, but she also had this incredible interior world. Like, looking back through old photos, in almost every one, she's holding a book. And then, I mean, it's so hard to say over the years, but, I mean, she's so sort of fiercely protective and loyal, and I think she's very sort of brave and bold, I'd say. I think she's certainly the person I want on my survival team.
She's been the younger one, but she's been the one who's done a lot of things first, and indeed forged ahead. Like, usually there's a sort of idea in my head that, you know, the older one does things first. That's part of the benefit of being the older one. You know, you go ahead and you get in trouble with the parents first, and you do smoking and naughty kissing and things like that. But actually, sorry, not that I'm not actually talking about those things in particular, but like, she's done some really incredibly brave things. Like, she fell in love and she moved all the way across the world for a boy. And I remember thinking, like, don't move, don't give up your job and move for a boy. But, you know, that was wrong. And she's, you know, she got married and had kids. And I haven't done either of those things. And it's always struck me as incredibly brave. And, I mean, I even remember when we were younger, she was always the one who, like, for instance, with travelling and things like that, maybe my inner life is richer than my interest in the outer, I don't know, but she always was the one who said, you know, let's go and backpack around Costa Rica. I don't know that I ever would have done it without her.
And how do you think she would describe you then, if she's this kind of brave, bookish older sister? How would she describe you?
Bookish, but incredibly, incredibly funny. I mean, so, you know, quick-witted, and just that, also the life and soul of the party. I think, you know, those periods of settling into life in new places are the ones where we possibly, you know, we all had to sort of find a way to fend for ourselves in a way. Not that, you know, there's necessarily anything negative in it, but it's very hard to fit in again and again. So I think those periods, you know, people find a way of doing it, whether that's retreating into a quiet place for a while or becoming more outgoing than you might naturally be. Mm-hmm. I've certainly found myself in that second place before. Sorry, I'm rambling. How would she describe me? I don't know. I mean, we've laughed a lot over the years, so probably quite I don't want to call myself funny, but quite fun. And maybe a bit I don't know, anxious.
She thinks you would describe her as somewhat anxious.
Yeah, I think we both have the capacity to feel anxious, particularly about the past, and feel that, you know, everything one's done is quite embarrassing or just worth a sort of a long hot bath of shame. And like, just because I think it's a sort of slightly shared hypervigilance. Mm. But I think she's a gentler soul, you know. Mm. So she takes it more to heart.
In my mind, and forgive me if this is totally wrong, but when I read about your childhood, this kind of peripatetic childhood all around the world and picking up and packing up, as I've said, and integrating and relying on each other for company. And then when I got the emails to set up this podcast, I was like, oh, look at that. Antonia lives in Los Angeles. That's a long way away from Catriona now.
Yes. That's my one great sadness about being here, is being away from my family and from Cat. I miss them dreadfully.
And how do you stay in touch?
I mean, thankfully, we're in the age that we are, so we can speak to Kat as often as I can get hold of her. She's so busy, and she has been the most unbelievable support. You know, she's come out for the birth of both of my sons, which has been amazing. especially this younger son who was born, you know, in the pandemic, and she really made such an enormous effort to be here, which was huge for us. And she's got a wonderful bond with particularly our older son, both of them, but it meant the world that we could have her here to be with him.
Yeah. So hard during the last year, all of these stories of separation. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to poke.
No, I'm so sorry. I cry at everything, by the way. Sorry about that.
So do I. I think it's, I don't know what it is. Maybe the last year has made us softer than we were before.
Well, it was amazing. That's the thing. That's what I was saying about the bravery. I mean, physically, the idea of what she actually did to produce an actual human being, just, I don't really understand it. Do you know what I mean? It's incredible to me. And it's incredible that she... Not that she did it, because she's actually very physically quite brave. It's just that she's... it's happened to someone that close to me. And it's so strange seeing her in the little boys, you know, in their little faces sometimes. And you think, God, you know, this person is made of her. Yeah. It's extraordinary. And they felt like family immediately as well, actually. I was surprised by that. Not because I didn't expect to love them, but because that immediate visceral, you're made of me and I'm made of you, I didn't expect it to be quite so overpowering, you know.
I remember that with my first nephew, who lived overseas as well. Really? Absolutely, blood of my blood. I thought, well, that's it. I would die for that. Straight away.
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's true. And I think aunties are actually quite important.
Hugely important.
Oh, well, she's so amazing with children. She just is so natural and so fun with them. Our older son has had a chance to really bond with her, and like whenever she calls and whenever he hears the FaceTime noise, he goes cat, and he can't wait to see her face. So she's, I mean, from our side, she's just assumed that role so beautifully.
And I wonder, I mean, doesn't sound maybe like it, but I wonder, she's become a mother, does it feel like she's sailed off without you, or do you feel like because you're so close to the boys, she's taken you with her?
I feel like I'm very much part of their life, and yeah, I do. I feel like we've both found our correct channels, as it were. It's not something that I feel that there's burning desire for that she has superseded me in. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I finally got the life I want, really, with writing. Can you imagine, like, my parents, I wanted to be an actor and then a writer. And it's like, out of the frying pan, into the fire. And they probably were just thinking, you know, is she going to retire with us? So I've got a life doing that now, and it suits me. It feels like we both built something, and I can really, I can very much enjoy what she's built, because it's very beautiful.
Now, you know, she's writing books and getting the sort of plaudits she deserves for writing brilliant books. What does it feel like to have this, you know, old, brave, bookish, funny sister be admired in the way that perhaps, I'm guessing, you kind of always thought she should be admired by lots of people, not just you?
Oh, I think you just summed it up, that it's exactly how I have always, you know, felt that she should be received, and how her books should be enjoyed, and I think there's something wonderful about this sort of happening now. You know, she's been through so much, you know, becoming a writer, and it's a big new career to build, really. So I'm so happy that all of that work is paying off, and I really can't put it better than it's exactly what I think she deserves.
Oh, now I'm going to cry. Oh, that's very, very sweet. Oh, she's a dog. Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, well, God. Yeah, that's very Antonia. She's amazing.
Thanks to Catriona and Antonia. And thank you too for listening. Do you have nicknames for each other, you two? I know you call her Cat. Is there any others?
When she was really little, we all called her Kanga. And Katie, I mean, she calls me Noon, Noonie or Noon.
Noonie. Yeah, yeah. I think I'd called you that earlier, and I thought, oh God, did I just call you Noonie? Maybe you don't want me to.
I'll call her any variation of anything. Cattle, katink.
And the shout out out the kitchen door. Katie, Noonie, Chris, Topsy. Topsy's the dog. Like any of them will do.
Thank you too to Tanita Tikaram, who let us use this amazing song. Sound design is by Nick Carter at Mixsonics, and digital production by Charlotte Griffiths. There'll be no new episode next week as it's half term, but later on this week, listen out for the first conversation with Professor Alison Pike about roles that siblings assume in the family. To see some really sweet pictures of Catriona and Antonia, or to catch up on any episodes you may have missed, or to find out more about the podcast, head to relativelypodcast.com. There's a good tradition of love and hate. Staying by the fireside, there's a good tradition of love and hate. Staying by the fireside, now the rain may fall. Your father's calling you, you still feel safe inside. Although your ma's too proud, your brother's ignoring you, you still feel safe inside. Oh, was this solo? Was this yesterday? Was this true for you? 'Cause while all the rest have taken time, this didn't do a lot for you.
Got a load of rosettes. We've got a load of rosettes. My rather strange fumbly answer. My rather strange fumbly answer.
I'm holding that back.
It sounds like
that little vignette makes me terrified of putting myself on the actual thing.
It makes me feel like a really bad experimental poem about the podcast.
It's like a fever dream. We got loads of rosettes.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.